It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies. The temperature has shot up to 44 degrees. Out at the airport, they show 79% humidity, northeast winds at 10 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for these sunny skies to gradually become mostly cloudy. Northeast winds to 15 miles per hour today, and a 30% chance of rain starting about 3 this afternoon. Starting tonight about 9, the rain is expected to seriously start and is expected to continue at least over the weekend. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Department of Agriculture is giving money to Interior Alaska villages to help improve water systems and landfills. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers say they are ready to start dredging the bar in front of Unalaska Bay. And a man was rescued from the mudflats near Girdwood yesterday.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Attorney General Merrick Garland is appointing a special counsel to oversee the investigation into classified material found at former President Donald Trump's Florida estate. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports the assignment also includes key aspects of the probe into the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol last year.
Veteran prosecutor Jack Smith will start work immediately, and the Justice Department will ensure he has enough resources. Smith once led the Public Integrity Unit at DOJ, and he's since served as a war crimes prosecutor in The Hague. Attorney General Merrick Garland says there are extraordinary circumstances that demand the appointment of a special counsel, including former President Donald Trump's decision to run again and President Biden's own likely 2024 bid. Garland says he's confident the special counsel's probe will not lead to delay. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
With House Speaker Nancy Pelosi stepping down from the Democratic leadership position she's held for 20 years, a new class of hopefuls is entering the race to take over. Here's NPR's Lexi Schapitl.
New York Congressman Hakeem Jeffries has announced he's running for Democratic leader. He's favored to win the top job, and if he's elected, he would become the first Black congressman to serve as party leader. Catherine Clark of Massachusetts is seeking the Democratic whip position, while Pete Aguilar of California is running for Democratic caucus chair. The three would represent a younger and more diverse slate of leaders for a party whose base is increasingly made up of younger voters and people of color. Pelosi has released a statement expressing confidence in their ability to lead the caucus. Lexi Schapitl, NPR News, Washington.
Hundreds of Twitter's remaining employees are leaving after the social media platform's new owner, Elon Musk, gave them an ultimatum: commit to hardcore work or resign. NPR's Bobby Allen reports the latest exodus has many fearing outages and other system failures at the social network.
Musk gave Twitter staffers 36 hours to take what was effectively a loyalty test, pledge to building a, quote, breakthrough Twitter 2.0, or leave with 3 months of severance. While the exact number of employees who opted to leave is still being tallied, some early reports suggest it could be a staggering number. Some of the platform's critical systems may be fully hollowed out. The latest resignations come after Musk already laid off half of the company. With so much of the technical staff gone, some experts predicted the whole platform would go down. The hashtag RIP Twitter caught on. A request for comment to Twitter, which currently does not have a communications department, was not returned. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
The National Weather Service forecasts more than 4 feet of lake effect snow for the Buffalo, New York area. Visibility expected to fall to near zero. At least half a foot reportedly fell in a single hour just south of Buffalo. Millions more people in several Great Lakes states are under snow alerts today. From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, this is Terry Haynes. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is granting $3.6 million to interior Alaska villages to help improve water systems and landfills. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports.
The grants will pay for new well and wastewater treatments for homes in Rampart and improvements to McGrath's water system. They'll also fund the engineering and environmental reports for a new solid waste facility in Ruby, new landfills in Rampart and Tanacross, and repairs to Nenana's wastewater treatment system. Julia Nelica is the USDA Rural Development Director for Alaska. She says it's important for federal agencies to recognize that water and waste management is part of rural health.
With our communities in Alaska, you know, health doesn't, it isn't just a hospital. Health starts from your drinking water to waste disposal to being able to have telemedicine appointments along the way.
Nelica grew up in Nenana, and she says shipping costs and harsh weather often delay repairs to infrastructure in rural Alaska. Now, climate change is adding additional challenges as those water and waste systems age.
A lot of the infrastructure was built all around the same time. And so we're seeing aging of that infrastructure occurring at the same time. And that is putting additional stress on those systems, on those communities.
Nelica has visited communities throughout Alaska this year to assess needs. She says those visits underscored the need to improve waste management in many villages.
It was entirely distressing, and I think about it constantly, about seeing young children, young, pushing, you know, their bikes around, playing, little ones. And right next to where they're playing is where you dump human waste into pretty much cardboard boxes that is then picked up. And you think about not only how unsanitary that is, but also what message that sends to our children.
The USDA is partnering with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium to complete this latest group of projects in the interior. Villages throughout Alaska can apply to the grant program year-round through their local rural development office. Early next year, Nelica says the USDA plans to launch a rural partners network meant to give local leaders better access to grant applications and other federal resources. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says it is moving forward with dredging on Alaska Bay. The project would create a channel to pass through a large shoal of glacial moraine that runs across the bay. Currently, those compressed glacial boulders and rocks make the water much shallower than the surrounding areas. Jathan Garrett manages the project with the Corps. He spoke at a meeting last week to update the community on the project.
I'm sure everyone there is aware of the bar that goes across the bay there, and it does create kind of a barrier.
He said that barrier becomes a blockage for larger and deep draft vessels requiring extra precautionary measures like light loading, waiting for wind or tide conditions to improve, or for carrying less fuel.
I'm sure there's been several instances where you've seen the ships lined up about 2 miles apart and single file waiting for a turn to get in there.
Dredging is expected to reduce those delays and increase economic opportunities in Dutch Harbor. The project would require underwater blasting to break up the bar, then disposing of the rocks and boulders nearby in a part of the bay with deeper water. There are many environmental concerns in the area. The Army Corps determined that the recommended plan is likely to have a negative effect on local marine mammals, that is, sea otters, sea lions, and humpback whales. But the Corps is required to work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service to minimize those impacts. The project can use aerial surveys and time the blasts around animal migrations. The project will cost around $30 million. More than two-thirds of that will be federal funds, but the city of Unalaska is also responsible for some of it. Garrett says he expects the funds to become available by the end of the year. A long-planned cable connecting Metlakatla and Ketchikan took a big step towards becoming reality on Thursday. The Biden administration announced a $10.4 million grant to fund the two-mile undersea cable, which will carry power and broadband internet service to Alaska's only native reservation. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, local leaders say they hope it'll make Metlakatla a better place to live and work.
The $10.4 million grant comes from the Department of Commerce's National Telecommunications and Information Administration and is funded by last year's bipartisan infrastructure law. Keolani Booth is the chairman of Metlakatla Power and Light, the local utility on Annette Island. He says the cable will serve a dual purpose.
It's a cable that has both the broadband and the electricity. And then that'll bring the broadband into town and to all the households and get the first parts of the infrastructure for setting it up for everyone and getting it so our utility can run the broadband to the homes.
The federal agency says the connection will benefit almost 600 homes and businesses in Metlakatla. Metlakatla has already installed land-based power and broadband lines running from the planned cable landing into town. Once broadband service comes online, he says he expects a big boost for the local schools and the clinic, as well as students who are learning remotely. And he says it'll also be a boon for local businesses.
What we're hoping for is to start creating some jobs at home.
The new broadband connection will enable speeds of up to 1 gigabit per second for both uploads and downloads, according to a grant announcement. That's 40 times faster than the top speed currently available in Metlakatla and on par with what's available in cities like Ketchikan, Anchorage, and Seattle. Booth says about 1,500 tribal members live in Metlakatla, and he says he hopes it'll encourage others who have left the community to return.
It's our first step towards, one of our first steps towards, you know, making lives, you know, affordable and livable for our residents here in Metlakatla so they can stay here. You know, I mean, it's very expensive to be where we are.
He also thinks it'll strengthen the ties between Metlakatla and Ketchikan, thanks to the power sales agreement recently greenlit by the Ketchikan City Council.
That'll give us the ability to, through our sales agreement, to purchase power, any hydropower or whatever they have, and then the same from our end, and just start being a good partner. You know, it's one thing about being Alaskan is that you're always there for each other.
Metlakatla's mayor, Albert Smith, says that the agreement is huge.
That just happened and got signed. So for this news to come out shortly after that was completed, it's just a really big deal for Metlakatla.
The cable is expected to be installed sometime in the next 2 to 3 years, though Booth cautions that the supply chain issues and other roadblocks could delay the project. Faster speeds would be available shortly after the cable is completed. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Traffic congestion will be a primary concern as Sitkins buckle in to plan for future tour seasons. The Sitka Planning Commission on Wednesday reviewed 2022's tourism operations to create recommendations for improvements in 2023 and beyond. Much of the forward thinking focused on how to best move 500,000 people in and out of town. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The starting point for the Sitka Planning Commission was data from a survey taken by citizens at the end of last summer's season. Respondents had plenty of feedback, most of it positive, on the closure of Lincoln Street on days with high passenger volumes. But the 74 days that Sitka's main downtown thoroughfare was closed to vehicles didn't solve congestion elsewhere. Amy Ainsley, Sitka Planning Director, said addressing traffic and visitor drop-off and pickup would be a big concern for next year, 2024, and into the future. Next on the list was an issue that's been gaining momentum in public discussion lately.
And then secondly, so many comments in the community survey about bus electrification.
Chris McGraw owns and operates the Sitka Sound Cruise Terminal, where most of Sitka's 383,000 passengers disembarked in 2022. That number could be much larger in 2023, possibly as many as 200,000 more. That would create round-trip bus traffic 5 days a week to downtown Sitka and back. Even so, McGraw says electric buses don't pencil out.
As for the electrification of bus transportation, a 45-foot motor coach like we operate in the $1 to $1.2 million range to purchase. We have 17 of them. So the feasibility of a private entity funding electric buses at this point is non-existent.
Bruce Conine runs a wildlife tour business out of small buses. He offered a 50,000-foot view of the problem. He recommended that Sitka look past buses and go right to rail.
As long as it's electric and moving people, you guys will have access to huge amounts of government money. Maybe even a company like Elon Musk Boring Company could bore a hole in the ground, pop up at the Centennial Building. It'd be a unique thing. I think some of the cruise ship passengers might even think it would be a cool stop to go and actually ride in a tunnel made that way. And it could be very fast. I'd love to see it underground just so it wouldn't mess up our little town.
Conine was perfectly serious about electric rail. Part of future planning is thinking big. His idea doesn't sound so far-fetched when he contrasts it to the reality of moving almost 600,000 people by bus.
Rather than have to hire 60 bus drivers to try to run that many people and keep that much machinery going on the road, which is very hard, to have a rail system that could bring them in quick and get it paid for by government funds, why not?
Another more down-to-earth approach came from an unlikely source, Laurie Boise, director of Visit Sitka. Boise thought solving Sitka's problem with visitor transportation included improving transportation for locals by addressing the shortage of taxis in town and optimizing the public transportation system called the ride.
This is no reflection on the management of the ride, but our public transportation system, I think, needs to be looked at as part of long-term planning. Who is it servicing? How is that working? Right now, it only works Monday through Friday. It doesn't service the airport. We don't have enough taxis. People are walking into town over the bridge because they can't get from the airport here.
The Planning Commission's task now is to make recommendations to the Assembly about 2023 and beyond, and many of them will expand on efforts begun last year on topics like temporary restroom locations, food cart permits, signage, and safety improvements. This is a lot to bite off for a group whose traditional job involves reviewing and approving conditional use permits and variances. As the 90-minute meeting drew to a close, Commissioner Daryl Windsor offered one last recommendation for municipal government.
I think the Assembly ought to make a tourist planning commission separate from this commission.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A water rescue that halted traffic on the Seward Highway on Thursday began with a 911 call. The caller, a surveyor, was doing work on the mudflats near Girdwood and had become trapped in the quicksand-like mud.
The individual was stuck in mud up to his waist with about 3 inches of water above that waistband.
That's Girdwood Fire Chief Michelle Weston. She says crews responded to the call about 10 a.m. on the Tidewater Slough, just north of Girdwood. Weston says the crew used a special nozzle to spray water into the mud as the rescuer stood on a backboard placed atop the surface.
From that, the person will work the mud rescue tool around the patient to free the patient. And when this is happening, it's also important for the individual to also work to try and get their legs free as this is happening.
The surveyor was freed without injuries in about an hour, and the highway was reopened. Weston warned that the mudflats along the arm can be dangerous, with some patches trapping people. Some have drowned in the rising tides.
So where you might be at one moment standing on one part, that's good. One part might not. The next part of the soil might not be good.
She also says cell phone reception can be spotty along the Turnagain arm. She urges people on or near the flats to travel together so someone can help if a person gets stuck.
Insight Daily Radio. Iconic character actor Tom Wopat reprises his role as Sheriff Alden Rockwell in the long-awaited sequel to the action movie County Line, with County Line all in. When a not-so-popular lawyer is killed literally on the county line, Maxville County Sheriff Alden Rockwell must reluctantly work with the newly elected sheriff, Joe Porter, of the neighboring York County. Her big city methods clash with his old-school ways, but when the murderer continues to strike, they must learn to set aside their differences and work together in order to stop the killer. We spoke with Tom and co-star Kelsey Crane about this exciting new film.
In the first movie, I lost the job, and then I saved the day anyway. So in this movie, I'm back in power, but it's, you know, it's still a situation where I'm older, and I'm reminded of it pretty constantly, that time is moving on and the business is moving on. The business evolves over the time, the business of law enforcement. And it's whether I can still be relevant, be valid.
Yeah, both a lot to prove, same mission, got to get those bad guys, both characters all in.
That's Tom Wopat on his role as Sheriff Alden Rockwell with co-star Kelsey Crane in County Line All In. County Line All In premieres on INSP Saturday, November 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. To find out where to watch in your area, go to countylineallin.com. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 18th day of November, the year 2022. It's less than 1 week away from Thanksgiving. The sun rose at 9:02 today. It'll set again at 4:46. That will give us 7 hours and 44 minutes of daylight, a loss of 3 minutes and 57 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 15 degrees, set in 2009, and our record high was 52, set in 1990. We're much closer to the latter, 44 degrees under what were once fair skies. I'm afraid these predicted clouds are starting to roll in. Out at the airport, they have 79% humidity, northeast winds to 10, and still 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for a 30% chance of rain, especially after 4 p.m., northeast winds to 15. Rain tonight after 10 p.m. Low around 41 tonight with northeast winds to 25. And rain tomorrow and Sunday as well. Rain is likely for Monday. Mariners, here's your forecast from Marmot Island to Sitkin at Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. Northeast 25 today, seas to 9 feet. Northeast 30 tonight, seas up to 11 feet. And for tomorrow, northeast 30, seas to 13 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow. Northeast 30 today, seas to 10 feet. For tonight, northeast 30, seas coming up to 12 feet. And for tomorrow, northeast 30, seas to 11 feet. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here this afternoon at 4:02. That will be a 3.1-foot tide here on the east side, followed by a high tide at 9:41 this evening of 6.4 feet. Our middle-of-the-night low tide will happen at 3:52 a.m. and be 1.8 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will happen at 10:30 and be 7.7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide this afternoon will happen at 4:47. That will be a 4.4-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:18 p.m. of 10.4 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night will be at 4:39 a.m. and be 2.8 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 10:59, just about 11 a.m., and be 12.8 feet in Larson Bay. Coming up tonight, Scuttlebutt, a Galley Tables event for youth. Show your support and have a great time listening to their young storytellers spin a yarn and entertain the crowd. That's happening at 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium's Drama Pod. There's absolutely no charge for admission, so come on over to the Gerald C.'s Drama Pod at 7 p.m. and be entertained by our young storytellers. Also on Saturday, Galley Tables is back. Kodiak's beloved storytelling event returns this Saturday, November 19th. Listen to 7 storytellers tell their stories about the theme Home Again. That's happening in St. Mary's Gym, and doors open at 7 p.m. The story starts at 7:30, and local marimba band Chitsua will be performing between 7 and 7:30. Donations are welcome. Find out more at galleytables.com. But again, that's St. Mary's Gym tomorrow night, Doors open at 7 p.m. The Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary is having a general meeting on Saturday as well. That's happening at 10 a.m. in the Barometer Room at the Providence Kodiak Island Hospital. Everyone's welcome to attend. The short business meeting will be followed by the decorating of the angel trees. Please plan to attend and help decorate the angel trees throughout the hospital and support the raffle. Raffle tickets will be available for members to pick up at that time, too. This is the last general KHA meeting until January. Coming up, the Aleutic dancers will be performing at the Aleutic Museum, and the new temporary exhibit, Visions of Native Identity, is now open at the Kodiak History Museum. This exhibit explores the questions of who is Native and who decides. The exhibit was created with a team of Native community members who proposed this exhibit as part of KHM's community exhibit proposal system. So the Aleutic dancers will be performing at the Kodiak History Museum. To celebrate the new exhibit and Alaska Native Heritage Month, the Kodiak History Museum is hosting the Kodiak Aleutic Dancers on November 19th. That's happening at 1:30 p.m. for performance in the galleries. The event is free with the purchase of admission to the museum. Again, that's November 19th at 1:30 p.m., and the new exhibit is going on now. Also, courtesy of Mattson, free museum admission to the Aleutic Museum. That begins the 22nd. I believe that's next Monday. So thank you, Mattson, and be sure to stop by the Aleutic Museum and take a look at all their exhibits. Notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Directors Education regular meeting on November 21st. That will begin at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, number F140 of the Old High School Wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans. Meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website. That's www.kibsd.org. Look under the Board of Education tab. If you need more information, contact the Secretary of the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. And if you haven't yet, a note for elementary school families, mark your calendar for Tuesday, November 22nd. That will be an early release day for all Kodiak Island Borough School District elementary schools. Grades kindergarten through 5 will be dismissed at 1:50 p.m. due to scheduled family teacher conferences. Please call your school office if you have any questions about that. The Chiniac Christmas Market is happening Saturday, December 3rd. That's going on noon to 4 p.m. at the Chiniac Library. And they'll be featuring arts, crafts, pottery, salves, preserves, baked goods, and more, all handmade in Kodiak. To get there, take a right on King Crab Way at mile 41 and a quarter. The road will curve to the right, and the library is located on the left-hand side of the road. Also, included in a series of workshops that are being held at Kodiak College, coming up on November 30th, the second in the soap-making classes, Chemistry of Cold Process Soap-Making. Soap-making is part craft and part science. The foundation of soap-making starts with understanding its chemistry. In this two-day workshop, you will learn the material, skills, and chemistry needed to craft a basic soap recipe. You will finish up the session by making your first bar of soap. In the second session, you will evaluate the purity of your soap. All materials needed to craft your soap will be provided. And those go on Wednesday, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Go to the Kodiak College website for more details. And don't forget, going on all month long, STEMAPALOOZA with the Girl Scouts of America. Celebrate science, technology, engineering, and math with STEMAPALOOZA, going on all the way to November 30th. All girls in grades kindergarten through 12 are invited to explore this month-long event. All you need to do is visit the Girl Scouts of Alaska's website to find details about live virtual programs, at-home activities, competing with your family in STEM trivia, earning a telescope, becoming a citizen scientist, and learning what it takes to put your STEM dreams into action. Try at least one activity, and you can earn your STEMAPALOOZA patch, or dive in and try them all. Again, just visit the Girl Scouts of Alaska's website.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the November 18th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. The storms of the last week or so brought a beautiful assortment of seaweed onshore. If you're still looking for seaweed to put in raised beds for next spring, you're in luck. Me, I just love the colors. It's all the colors of autumn, only from the ocean instead of the land. My dog loves rooting through it all, hoping to find some poor washed-up fish to roll in or trot off with. You never know what treasures you might find there. Humans have a long tradition of storytelling. From the times before written history and printing presses, we passed our knowledge and wisdom along through stories. Tall tales were invented somewhere along the way as entertainment. In recent years, storytelling has enjoyed a renaissance of sorts. Public radio has The Moth, Juno has Mudrooms, Anchorage has Arctic Entries, and Kodiak has Galley Tables. Galley Tables is back with a live show this Saturday featuring seven storytellers telling their seven-minute story on the theme Home Again. Galley Tables will be held in the St. Mary's Gym, and the doors open at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Enjoy the music of Kodiak's marimba band Chitsua from 7 to 7:30, then sit back to hear some great tales. Donations are gladly accepted at the door. You can even grab a burger at the St. Mary's fundraiser booth just outside the gym before the music and storytelling starts. On Friday night, you can enjoy a new storytelling event designed especially for our youth. Called Scuttlebutt, this event is also free and will be in the Auditorium Drama Pod on Friday at 7 p.m. Come on out and support all the storytellers Friday and Saturday night. The perfect thing to do on a dark, rainy night. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day.